General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African Bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
Martin Prescott and Carl Peterser, each hour seemed as long as the whole cycle of 24. When the dance had finished, the Matabili had sat about in groups until parties of warriors began pouring out of the valley into the hills. These must be the bands of scouts that were causing the column so much anxiety. But always there were warriors left behind, and the two men knew that the whole force would sleep there again that night. They spent their time polishing their assegais with ash from the dead fires and working on their shields. And after a time, Prescott and Peterser lost interest in them. There was no means of judging the passage of time except by the shadows on the hilltops. For a long time, the valley was exposed to the full glare of the sun, and then the section nearest them became slowly overshadowed. The afternoon had begun. Throughout the day, no one came near the cave. A cave in a hillside. Three men. Prescott, Peterser, and Umzimkulu, the black man. Watching. Watching. Long hours. Their story, Mlimo and the Leopard.
Feel like exploring further back there. Safe.
Too dark. We can't use a light. A light will betray us. Even a small light.
Is it really that, Caro? Or are you afraid of the last tenant of this cave?
Calling me a coward, Martin.
You?
Calling me a coward. Saying I'm afraid.
I'm not saying you're afraid. If you were, you wouldn't be here now. This is no place for men who might be afraid. They're not here. This place with the warriors, just across there.
I am afraid, but not of the Matabili. I'm afraid of the leopard. You show me, you tell me the name of a man who isn't afraid of being trapped in a cave like this one with a leopard somewhere.
It might not come back.
And it might come back. Can you imagine, Martin, the very moment of execution, eh? The moment our plan's ready, leopard, creeping upon us.
There's nothing we can do about it. Forget the leopard. Oh, if I don't sleep now, I'll sleep when I mustn't sleep. Do you mind?
You go to sleep. I watch. Umzimkulu and me, we'll watch.
Prescott was asleep within the minute. Carl Peters' eyelids were heavy too, and after a few moments he gestured to the ever-watchful Umzimkulu that he too would rest. The big native nodded. Time passed. Umzumkulu woke Prescott first, and then the other man. He gestured urgently, and the three men crawled to the entrance of the cave and crouched behind the leopard rock. The native pointed to a boulder on the hillside a few yards below and a little to the right of them. The top of it was just covered by the shadow of the hill itself. In front of it, looking down into the valley, sat two Matabele Ndunas, each with the married man's ring on his woolly pate. They were talking together as they watched the valley fill with the return of the scouting parties. Their voices floated clearly up to the cave.
Just before the dawn we shall strike. The white men cannot stand against the assegais of our young warriors. In the night they will sleep in the bosom of the two hills. And just before the dawn, we shall fall upon them like locusts, and they shall trouble us no more. No more.
The Nduna emphasized his last words by stabbing his assegai into the earth beside him. So the attack was planned on traditional lines for the next morning.
But you know the great Black Bull has commanded that we must not kill these white men unless they first harm us. And you know also that they have been careful not to tread in our footprints. How then can we attack them in defiance of our great king?
How was not Israel, the happy one, slain in the rage of the Makalanga dogs on the hilltop? And cannot we say it was the white men who killed him? Did not our scouts see three white men climb to the village and remain there while the sun moved from there?
The Nduna pointed to the sky.
To there. And does not Trudova swear that one of them insulted the Matabele people at the king's kraal before the Inkwala? We have enough reason.
It would be better if we did not kill them.
Never yet have the Matabele been defeated in battle. To the east, north, south, west have we slain those who dared oppose us. And so we shall slay this man also.
And he turned and stalked proudly down the hillside. After a moment, the other rose and followed, shaking his head slowly.
So, they're not unanimous. They can't agree to kill. They can't agree to attack the column. Perhaps Lobengula isn't so ill-disposed as we feared. He's afraid of flouting roads, you see, Carl. Well, there were two Indunas. One for, one against.
The king's hundreds of miles away, Martin. The king's impi is here.
Lobengula would punish them.
The impi tracks the Koran. Day after day, the young ones, the young warriors, will side with the first Induna to ask for blood. You know that, Martin. Lobengula would not dare to punish them because they would have expressed the will of the people.
All the same, there are level-headed men amongst them. This is all to the good of the success of our plan.
The sun began to set. A group of warriors came striding up the hill from the valley towards the cave. Martin Prescott realized that the time had come.
They come, Ngoz.
At the foot of a sloping ledge of rock before the cave, the Matabele stopped and sank to the ground. There were six warriors. The setting sun bathed the tops of the hills in golden light, but their slopes were deep in shadow. A moment's pause, and then a figure advanced onto the rock and slowly approached. Even in the uncertain light, Prescott could see that this was not a Matabele.
Not speaking Zulu. Not Matabele.
Makalanga tongue.
Makalanga witch doctor.
The witch doctor Lawrence told us about.
He is going.
Shh, shh, wait.
The witch doctor, a little shrunken man, knelt before the black mouth of the cave which hid the white men and Umzimkulu. He knelt leaped until his head touched the rock before him. Then he swung back on his heels with raised hands and lowered head.
Martin, what if it doesn't work, Carl?
A plan, you've got to try.
They might suspect something. Know they've been hoaxed. What then?
Nobody knows that, man. Nobody. It is a chance.
I know. But if they discover us, then Shuro, the doctor, loses his life too.
No, that was the plan. Shuro has agreed. The little witch doctor has agreed. Lawrence agreed when the plan was made. He's doing what he can do. If we are discovered and we die, then he will watch us die.
I know. There's no need to unmask him. Hate to think what the Matabele would do to him if they found he was a traitor.
As long as we can trust Shuro.
And we're not sure of that. It's desperate, all right.
The situation requires something desperate. Otherwise, a lot of men are going to die. I don't want them to die, neither do you.
The doctor, Shuro, he will see soon, God. No, God.
I hope you... Good luck, Martin.
Like a cast-off cloak, Martin Prescott's nervousness dropped from him. Now that the moment had come, his brain was cool and alert. The part which he'd rehearsed came without effort. He pitched his voice in a low key.
O mighty sons of mighty men! Do you seek death at the hands of the white men?
The waiting with Abili started, and then... They were silent.
Are you but callow youths that you must seek death before the sun rises? See! The hilltops around you are bathed in the blood of the dying sun. So shall your blood darken the earth should you seek to slay the white men. For others shall come in their footsteps, and you shall surely die. Yet there are those among you who would go their own foolish way. They are not worthy of the name of men, for they lack wisdom. Would you seize a leopard in the darkness? The leopard seeing, but you without sight? For the white men have an eye that is like the sun at night. It banishes the darkness and sees all. Give ear, O foolish sons.
The sun dipped behind the hills. In the brief, somber twilight, the deep blackness of the cave's mouth enhanced the mystery of how the Mlimo knew of the plan to attack the white men at the next dawn, in defiance of Lobengula's orders, of the searchlight that blinded the eyes of watching warriors. Truly nothing could be hidden from the Mlimo, the god who dwelt out of the sight of men in a cave on the hillside. Shuro, the tiny wizened witch doctor, sat on his heels like a graven image. Nothing in his manner, nothing upon his face gave any hint that he knew from where the voice which startled and gave birth to fear came.
Oh, foolish sons! There is need of you at the place of the king. No man knows what is to happen, for he sees and hears only that which is there. But I see and hear the things that are to come. And I tell you to return at once, for the king has other work for strong men to do. Do not tarry on your going. Before the next sun rises, be gone! On your way! I have spoken and told you these things. And what is to be, will be! Be gone!
And after bowing their heads to the ground, the warriors ran down the hillside. They held urgent consultation with those that had stayed at the bottom of the hill, and then the whole group moved swiftly across the valley to the fires of the Impi leaping orange in the darkness. Shuro, the little witch doctor, the man whose magnetism had made the trick possible, had vanished.
Shh. It's all right, Martin. There's no one left to us.
They might have left sentries. Someone to watch over the cave. Quiet.
Watch over their cave? Watch over their god, man? Will you seize a leopard in the darkness? The leopard seeing, but you without sight?
Oh, Martin, that was the bit I enjoyed the most. Knowing what we know about this cave.
Now for the most difficult part. You've played the part, Martin, for good or bad. Nothing more we can do.
Except escape. With our lives.
Shuro went away. I didn't see him go. One minute he was down there listening to you. Next minute, gone.
It's getting very dark. Umzinkulu?
He... Umzinkulu.
Stay easy, Mkos.
What was that?
A signal, Mkos. But do not move. We shall soon see what it means.
There!
Someone passed close.
And in the gathering darkness, the three watchers saw more warriors, and still more pass by the mouth of the cave, not more than 50 yards away. They all made for the valley's floor.
They have called the sentries, of course. They have heard the voice of the guard of the cave, and they will obey.
We won!
All is well, O voice that charms the night.
Have they all gone? Oh, thank heavens. I was afraid.
Have no fear, of course.
Let's leave now while the way's clear.
Wait. I hear a sound.
What is it? The leopard! It's come back!
Martin Prescott attempted to rise, and it was only Umzinkulu's sudden grip upon his arm that restrained him from rushing blindly down the hillside.
Stay, Martin! Leopard!
No leopard, Inkos. Had it been, we should not have heard it.
Something approached from the back of the cave.
A leopard does not move uncertainly in the darkness. It is a man.
We can deal with a man. But how can he come from in there behind us?
Another entrance. We didn't see it.
Wait. Not to speak.
They listened, every faculty alert. But they heard no sound. The intruder had stopped. Once Carl Peterson shifted his position. Immediately the native strong arm was upon his, restraining him, warning him. The seconds ticked away. Each second was an hour. And then, finally...
All is well, O white men. I am Shuro, the witch doctor. I have come to guide you, so that the Matabili shall not know. Come. Keep close to me.
No leopard, Martin. A guide.
Greetings, old man.
It wasn't so long ago that he was very much afraid of staying in here at all because of the leopard, Carl.
Hey, let us follow this old man. He has come to lead us to where all will be well.
Greetings, Shuro. Thank you for what you've done. You played your part well.
Hey, and you too, white man, would be a good god for the Matabili to keep in this cave. Come. Keep close.
Carl.
Prescott stretched out an arm and touched the flabby skin of the witch doctor's stomach. Then, keeping close behind him and with Umzinkulu at his heels, they moved deeper into the cave. Carl brought up the rear. The witch doctor moved with a sureness in the deep darkness that was incredible to Prescott and Petersen. Umzinkulu followed with a trust that was complete. If betrayal came now, then no one could do anything. In that darkness, any light, no matter how faint, was perceptible. Low down in the wall, where it turned into the heart of the hillside, was a dull glimmer. It came through a hole. They flattened themselves on their stomachs and crawled through it into a narrow tunnel, which after a few yards began to ascend. Both white men felt a momentary fear. Something primeval warned them of danger. Some long-forgotten sense inherited from their forefathers said, "You are alone now, buried in a hill, alone where no man can assist you." But the fear was unfounded. After a time, they found themselves climbing a shaft of rock which rose perpendicularly. In the blackness, every foot and handhold had to be felt for. Suddenly, Prescott's boot slipped off a ledge no more than an inch wide. And then he felt something solid under his groping foot. With Umzimkulu's skull underneath his foot, he was able to take a securer hold. And then the shaft took an easier slope. Presently, a patch of lighter darkness came into view.
Wait, I shall see that all is well.
We can trust him, Umzimkulu.
You may trust him, Goz. He is your friend.
A different tribe from the Matabele, yes. Makalaka, yes. Why should we trust him?
Because he has given his word to the white men. Because he has helped them, helped you, in the plan that prevents slaughter. Shuro has seen much slaughter, too much slaughter. He wishes to see no more. Trust him.
He's coming back. All is well. Come.
They climbed from a hole in the silent hillside, a hole concealed by a long, low series of stunted bushes. The silver light of the moon, hanging low in the western sky, seemed to blind them for a brief moment.
The side of the hill away from where the Matabele are.
What's that noise? Throbbing?
Look, we're only a mile and a half from the lager. We're close to the column, Martin.
And in a space between two neighboring hills, a large patch of white glimmered. A beam of light stabbed out and moved slowly over rock and tree towards them. They crouched, and the light passed over their heads. They stayed crouched. Martin was about to rise again when he felt an urgent touch upon his arm. For a while, it seemed as bright as day. The witch doctor gestured for silence, motioned for the white men to crouch low. Shuro made no further sign or sound, but from behind the low bushes watched the shaft to the cave intently. A breeze sighed gently and stirred the bushes and trees, but no living thing moved. And then...
Look!
Prescott, straining his eyes, saw a shadow detach itself from a deeper shadow and glide across a small open space to the bush that hid the shaft. The leopard had returned to its lair.
If we'd been 5 minutes later, leopard in that tunnel.
He turned to thank the little witch doctor, but Shuro had gone.
Umzimkulu, Shuro.
Gone, of course. His work is done. We are safe. Come.
They picked their way down to the bottom of the hill, and as they once again rested, the leopard, disturbed by the man scent, coughed angrily. And then the beast stepped out onto the rocky ledge over the valley, stood in the light of the moon, revealed to the white men in Umzimkulu, revealed also to the encamped Matabele. The Matabele, resting by their fires until the time came to move, looked up at the cave with fear and wonderment.
Would you seize a leopard in the darkness? The leopard seeing, but you without sight?
At that moment, the searchlight from the column moved over the sky. Its beam appeared to seek the moon, and then it plunged into the dark bush once more. The Matabele saw the searchlight's eye. The Matabele saw the leopard standing godlike on the ledge in the moon glow. They saw these things and they shivered, although the heat from their fires was great.
Would you seize a leopard in the darkness? The leopard seeing, but you without sight? For the white men have an eye that is like the sun at night. It banishes the darkness and sees all.
Elimelimo stayed in that cave with a full-grown leopard. And the leopard now is angry because we have not already obeyed him. Ah, truly Elimelimo is the god of all gods. And when he speaks, all men must do as he bids.
forbids them to do.
The coming dawn would see no blood, no death, no attack upon the white men lagered in the space between two hills.
Join us again next week for another story of the African Bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.